denounced the Israeli soldiers' behavior in 1 week ago and in last November. So the soldiers, they have a real an environment and atmosphere of incitement and escalation, and you know they want to be really following Itamar Ben-Gvir and other populists to show Palestinians more brutality and to revenge from Palestinian human rights defender who document the human rights violation. And really, I have fear of my life from what I see from the Israeli soldiers and the backup from the army and the backup from the government and even the backup of from the Israeli media, which is giving the soldiers excuses for what they are doing. It was so obvious on videos, but the Israeli media lied about it and the Israeli army lied about it.
Amir Ahas, we're going to end with you. You have the attack on Nablus. You hear what Issa is describing. You've got Israel's military bombing parts of the Gaza Strip after Palestinian militants fired rockets at southern Israel this week, with the Nablus raid being a huge provocation. Where is this going? We have 30 seconds.
Everything that has been described here has happened before. But and to Issa as well, also under former governments. The problem that now, and Israel has always was experimenting after the Nakba with all sorts of expulsion. What I'm afraid now is that we have the strongest people in this present Israeli government are politicians of the right wing who have openly advocated for mass expulsion of Palestinians. It's Smotrich and Ben-Gvir. They are the strongest. And if you go to Hebron, where Issa lives,
Amira,
then it is the
we're going to have to leave it there, but I thank you both for being with us. Amir Ahas, Haaretz correspondent, and Issa Amra.
You are listening to KBOO Portland.
KBOO is hiring a full-time web coordinator. The web coordinator maintains the front end of KBOO's website, promotes episodes, does copy editing, and helps train staff and volunteers on various website features. For the full job description and instructions for applying, please go to our website at kboo.fm/webhire23. Applications are due at midnight on Thursday, March 9th. KBOO is an equal opportunity and affirmative action employer.
Here at KBOO, we celebrate Black History Month. That's why we want to invite you to tune in this Friday at 6 p.m. for our Black History and Future Month series. This Friday, we will be airing the last episode of this special programming produced in honor of Black History. Again, this Friday at 6 p.m., tune in for the last episode of the Black History and Future Month series here on KBOO Portland.
Two, three, four.
Y'all ready for this?
Ladies and gentlemen.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 0.
Never been done before.
We're talking about a subject.
To bring you to the light.
Farewell to you, people.
David D, Hard Knock Radio, hanging out with you this afternoon. We are joined by two people who are well-known in the community and applauded for their vigorous work along the lines of education. We're talking about Zakiya Harris, no stranger to the community of Oakland and the Bay Area, and Candace Wicks Davis, who is also well-known. Both of you, we know you all as in the entertainment realm, but you are also well-schooled and well-versed entertainers. So you all are Renaissance women, if we can, in the likes of Paul Robeson. You do it all, and it's good to have you. It's good to have you all for a couple of reasons. One, your cultural prowess seems to have more and more importance when we talk about educating folks, especially at a time when you have so much being erased in classrooms and subject matter that is being distorted. And that distortion oftentimes takes place in cultural arenas where you have TV shows and comics and other forms of quote-unquote entertainment that often can be misleading. So it's good to have you all on to talk about the future of education, 21st education, as both of you are representing edutainment and equity. So welcome, Zakiya. Welcome, Candace. Let me start off with you, Zakiya. We were just talking earlier, about the future of education and considering what's been at stake and what's been the topic du jour. How are you seeing things right now in terms of new tools that we may need, or are there shortcomings in the current education system that absolutely need to be fixed right away?
Well, thank you so much, Davey, for having me. It's a pleasure to be here. And I believe that we're in a very critical moment globally, right? As some say, we are hospicing the old world and we're building the new. So we're in a very transitional space where we're watching old systems die. We're noticing that traditional forms of education are not serving our young people. Frameworks and dichotomies that have been used for centuries are no longer serving our young people. And we're also witnessing this beautiful rebirth, this beautiful co-creation of new models, of new language, of new ways of being in community together. And I think our job right now as cultural leaders, as workers, as educators, as parents, as global citizens, is really to be able to kind of be the conduit for that transition, to be the midwives, if you will, to support that just transition. So I think that it can feel very scary and overwhelming at times because folks don't have a groundedness in either one, right? We're not in the old world and we're not fully in the new. We're in this kind of agile, fluid space. We're in this chrysalis space of the caterpillar, right? It becomes complete mush before it springs out and spreads its wings as a butterfly. And so I think just as important, I would say, as kind of traditional educational frameworks is why we also have to begin to lean into the spiritual part of our lineage as people of African descent, as indigenous people, to understand, as you mentioned, as us as Renaissance women, that our cultures never separated our politics from our culture, from our music, from our dance, from our education, from the way that we engage spirit. And so that's our job right now, is to be able to share new frameworks and new currencies to the next generation, to the now generation. And we know that when we look at who is at the forefront of that innovation, who is being able to alchemize and synthesize tools of technology with their own creativity, at the core of it is Black young people, is Black youth, is urban youth. So there's a tremendous opportunity, but we have to yield and wield our power towards those opportunities and not get stuck in outdated systems of the past.
That's very insightful and I think very encouraging to hear. I'm going to come back to you on that because what you described is a fault line. There are people that just heard you speak that's going, I don't want my kid knowing about no spirituality. That makes them feel uncomfortable. And when I came up, it was reading, writing, and arithmetic. You know, there was no fun and games in school, and we shouldn't have fun and games now. It's making the kids soft, right? That's the excuse that's used to go back to an outdated model that, as you pointed out, is not just not working for us as Black folks, but it's not working for a lot of people all around. But that's the line in the sand, and I want to come back to that in a second. Candace, I want you to weigh in on this. How are you seeing the educational landscape based around the question and conversation that we started?
Yeah, thank you for having me, Davey. It's so good to see you, always. I think about, so the Pearson Institute released a report in partnership with Oxford Martin School and the Nesta Institute as well. And I got babies in the background, so y'all don't just have to pardon me. And they, what they came up with was that based on a bunch of research, that by the year 2030, which y'all, like, that's what, 7 years from now, right? Mm-hmm. The top 10 skills that young people are gonna need to have, they're gonna need to be able to, I mean, the top five are all like learning strategies, being able to teach people information, psychology, instruction, social perceptiveness, sociology, right? And so when I look at our programs and when I look at our education system, it's not teaching them that. It's not even making education look good or look hot. You know what I'm saying? So there's like a reboot and an update and an upgrade that we need to make, because the bottom line is, not only is the world different from when we were in school, the world is different from 2020.
Right.
It's a completely different world. So how can we possibly be educating our young people for the economic and social political realities of now, when in 7 years from now, it's going to be a totally different landscape? So we've got to, you know, and a part of what happens is that we are so in crisis, like we're living from crisis to crisis, that it's hard to imagine having time to actually sit and think about how to be prepared for the thing that's after the thing that's right now. Right. And so we've got to learn how to create space for dreaming, create space for innovation. And it's challenging. I'm not going to pretend that that's not a challenging thing to do, but it's imperative for our history. It's imperative for our future that we are really thinking about, okay, this is what's coming. How do we make sure that all the things that we're doing are setting our children up for success in the future, regardless of how we feel about it? Because the future is coming. Okay. Yeah. So we have to release that. And that's kind of that generational divide that you were just speaking to, that, you know, you might not agree with everything that young people are down with, but the generation before you didn't agree with what you were down with. And that didn't help. It didn't help us. Yeah.
Now, I'm glad you mentioned that, because the generation at various points in time fought on educational lines. It might have been students striking at Howard University, an all-Black institution, because they were dissatisfied with the direction of education. It might be at SF State, where I'm at, to make sure we have ethnic studies. And, you know, we can go to Cornell, where people were armed and, you know, had to take over buildings to make sure things got done.
Yeah.
But I bring all this up, and to you, Candace and Zakiya, two things that come to mind. One, the importance of imagination. That seems to be a concerted effort to limit the imagination of younger people. So this thing about crisis to crisis, you know, makes us have to focus on how am I going to survive versus me sitting back and dreaming about answers and solutions that we can come up with, and, you know, just dreaming and thinking and mm-hmm. executing a better world. Both of you all, because you all are artists as well, are in the business of imaginations. I'd be curious about your answer. The other thing that we seem to have a fault line with, and is compliance. Schools now demand that you comply, need you to sit down, be in order, you know, all these types of things. And compliance is good for you to be a consumer mm-hmm. and to get a job. Mm-hmm. So that seems to be one of the reasons there's so much resistance. If you're imagining, then you're not sitting there doing what the hell I say when I say it. And, you know, Black people being free and not complying is a problem in America. So any of you, the key, you want to hit that, and we'll come back to you, Candace.
I would love to hit that, and I would love that you brought up that notion of imagination, because I truly believe that in this next era, imagination is one of the most vital currencies that we can really empower our young people with, right? A currency is a something that you take to the marketplace. that allows you to navigate. It allows you to move forward in the fulfillment of what you are here to do. And one of our Yoruba proverbs teaches us that we come from heaven, but earth is the marketplace, right? Earth is where you actually come to make it happen, to get things done. And when you're in the market, right, you need currencies. And imagination, the ability to think outside of the box, the ability to envision a world where you may not have any physical evidence of what is possible, right? We could even speak to Martin Luther King and the I Have a Dream speech. We could look to who was able to thrive during the pandemic. And we know that the pandemic for us did not just start during COVID. It's people, it's leaders who are able to imagine a world outside of status quo. And, you know, to Candace's point, when we're looking at research and data, we also know that many of the folks that created social media platforms specifically brought together scientists, psychologists, educators, brain specialists, and they were able to figure out that these algorithms are actually destroying our creativity. That's why they call it a feed, because they want to feed you death, doom, gloom, and destruction that really supports their algorithm of status quo. And that is why many of the folks that became billionaires around these tech platforms will tell you straight up, they don't allow their young people to even utilize them, especially at younger ages, because of the destroying of creativity, the destroying of imagination, which, as we know, rules a certain part of our brain. So to this point around education, we also have to begin to imagine an educational model outside of unified school districts, right? When we look to other cultures, whether it's Jewish culture, our Latino brothers and sisters, our Asian brothers and sisters, we know that there are Chinese schools, right? There are schools of your own cultural identity that are supplemental and that stand next to the traditional schooling model. We know that in the African tradition, the first teacher is the mother. So how do we imagine a world and recreate a new algorithm to support our own creativity and our own imagination when we know that we have broken families, when we know that some of our elders are more like olders, right? An elder maybe is wise and has achieved a certain level of wisdom, but some of us, even though we have older people in our family, we can't really rely on them as elders. So we have to begin to reimagine these communities. My father grew up in a family where his biological parents were not the folks that raised him. It was aunties, it was uncles, it was the village, right? Even a notion that a nuclear family is responsible for a child is a very Western belief, that we know that when you look at indigenous culture, it is everybody coming together. And so how do we support that and create that when we know that our families are under stress, when we know they're under multiple pandemics? We have to reach into something else to imagine a new world. But that is the future belongs to those who have the currency of imagination.
You raised a few questions that people are going, Zakiya Harris, how do we do that? And I want to kind of remind people, Candace, if you will, let everybody know how they can dive in and get the full breadth of this conversation, because Zakiya just didn't come here to raise questions. She got answers and skill sets that she's going to be sharing with people. That's a nice tease to get people to check in on Friday.
Absolutely.
But tell everybody how they can dial in and be a part of a very robust conversation that digs deep into these questions.
Absolutely. So we are having our Educating the Black Child series on this Friday, February 17th. From 11:30 to 1. It is online, so you can tap in from wherever you are. We've been doing this conversation for almost 7 years, so it's a divine number to bring in this conversation with. So if you're interested, go to our website, E4E Consulting, E 4econsulting.com and go ahead and register. It's free to the public. And we're going to sit down and really dive into some concrete, tangible strategies for how we prepare our young people for, I mean, the 21st century skills are old now. So how we prepare them for whatever is next, whatever this is, the mush, as Zakiya called it, before we turn into a butterfly.
Right. One of the things that Zakiya was talking, allowing people to have their imagination be fully nurtured, takes place in a lot of private schools where they have broken away from the traditional models. And so you said something about being within certain unified school districts, which by law seem to be under pressure to have people meet certain type of standards in terms of testing, et cetera, et cetera. Candace, let me ask you this, because aside from that type of compliance, the landscape is such that now we have people wanting to enshrine into law, making it literally illegal to have either these type of conversations or to move kids in a direction where they start to imagine outside of very strictly and very rigid paradigms, as we're seeing in Florida and Texas and Tennessee and so many other places. How do you battle and how do you prepare to make sure our kids get educated when you have powerful people who are hell-bent on enshrining limitations in law into law?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's what's interesting about this time, because it's not the first time that our histories have been banned. So what I think is so interesting about this time is that we do have social media. We do have these private platforms, Netflix, Hulu, et cetera, that are putting our history on, that are showing those things. And so I think it's just an interesting time because they can't really do anything about that without challenging capitalism itself, because we're supposed to be a quote unquote free market. So if it's free, then these people should be able to put whatever content they want on. And so I think it's interesting what we're seeing in response to these bans is like what Zakiya was talking about, these auxiliary spaces, you know, banned book clubs. That's the response. Young people, I think it was in Alabama, walked out because their Black History Month program, they were trying to censor it and say you couldn't talk about anything before 1970, and those kids walked out. So for me, I feel like the young people are not going to accept that, and there's a lot of power in that. And then I think we do have spaces that we can cultivate. Young Gifted and Black is one of those outside auxiliary, you know, grassroots spaces that Mama Davis created in the 80s that is still going, where we teach Black history, and there's nothing you can do about it because we're not relying on your money. We're not relying on your ability to tell us whether or not we can do something. So I think those outside spaces, we will always need them. We will always need spaces that we are assigned and are, sorry, in control of. We should never allow for the entirety of the development of our children to be housed with anyone else other than us. Not to say that there's not a place for public schooling to do something, but we should always have our own spaces to cultivate the imagination, the identity, the foundational information for our kids.
Candace Davis, we appreciate you taking time out. Zakiya Harris, I want to let you get the last words. Any parting thoughts as people gear up to hear you really break things down this Friday from 11 to 1? Any final comments?
Well, I just want to thank you again, David, for giving us the opportunity and really just double down on what Candace said. I hope that folks, step one is go register for this event. It's going to be a really, really powerful discussion. And I think this discussion is also an example, right, of supplemental opportunities to really create more spaces, more safe spaces for that imagination and that deep creativity. And then for parents and community members out there, right, because it takes a village. And so, and therefore, we are all parents, to really look into their own local communities, find out about more about YGB. And if you're in other locations where there is no YGB, to find those small spaces. And I would even start online. There's a number of really a renaissance that occurred through COVID, where Black parents are really coming together in homeschool collectives mm-hmm. and cooperatives, mm-hmm. Creating these safe spaces for education for every grade level of a young person. You'd actually be surprised at how much is out there. So for folks to do their research and then join us on Friday.
And again, Candace, it is again, how do I register to do that?
Yeah, so you can go to eConsulting.com and go to event tickets and you'll find it there. It's this Friday, February 17th from 11 to 1 p.m. online, and we will see you there.
Yeah.
Takiya Harris, Candace Davis, thank you so much. See you on Friday as we continue our conversation on educating the Black child.
Thanks.
Hard Knock Radio. We're rocking with Picasso.
What?
And Maya.
Who?
And my last name is Susana. Yeah, yeah.
Yo, Chris, what you doing out of school?
Yo, man, they just suspended me, McBoo.
Word, they suspended the teacher?
Yeah, man, I'm getting so sick of this, man. They teaching us about nothing, man. You know what the bottom line is for Black people out here? It's quite simple. You must learn. Knowledge to others in a song, let me demonstrate the force of knowledge. Knowledge reigns supreme, the ignorant is ripped to smithereens. What do you mean when you say I'm rebellious? Cause I don't accept everything that you're telling us. What are you selling us? The creator dwelling us. I sit in your unknown class while you're failing us. I failed your class cause I ain't with your reasoning. You're trying to make me you by seasoning. Up my mind with C. Jane Run. See John walking a hardcore New York. Come on now, that's like a chocolate cow. It doesn't exist, no way, no how. It seems to me that in a school this ebony, African history should be pumped up steadily, but it's not. And this has got to stop. See spot, run, run, get spot. Insulting to a Black mentality, a Black way of life, or a jet Black family. So I include with one concern that you must learn.
Just like I told you.
You must learn. Believe that if you're teaching history, deal with straight up facts, no mystery. Teach the student what needs to be taught, cause Black and white kids both take shorts. When one doesn't know about the other one's culture, ignorance swoops down like a vulture. Cause you don't know that you ain't just a janitor. No one told you about Benjamin Banneker, a brilliant Black man that invented the almanac. Can't you see what KRS is coming at? With Eli Whitney, Haile Selassie, Granville Woods made the walkie-talkie. Louis Latimer improved on Edison. Charles Drew did a lot for medicine. Garrett Morgan made the traffic lights. Harriet Tubman freed the slaves at night. Madam C.J. Walker made the straightening comb. But you won't know this if you weren't shown. The point I'm getting at, it might be harsh, is we're just walking around brainwashed. See what I'm saying? It's not to diss a man. We need the 89 school system, one that caters to a Black return. Because you must learn.
It's funny how money changes situation. Miscommunication leads to complication.
Bienvenidos a Radio Prensa Pobre. Welcome to Poor People's Revolutionary Radio. From the streets to the bus shelters. This is your co-host, Muteado Silencio, con voces de migrantes en resistencia, in studio today with Poverty Scala, Poe Poet, co-host, mi carnala, Tiny.
From corp rape to cop killers, from the stupid bowl to the terrors of our hoods and our communities, Yeah, this is Poor People's Radio. That's PNN, not CNN, people. Live and direct from this small part of unsold, unbought, unpimped, unplayed Mama Earth that us houseless indigenous people call home fullness on sacred Ohlone Lashon land.
Polarized terror for generations on these occupied streets, corporate sports fetishizing our indigenous bodies. On these broadcasts of Poor People's Radio, we speak with comrades from the Hood Squad doing revolutionary work in the South Bay, uncovering the never-ending war and polarized terror of our black and brown bodies. But first, we speak with Clee Benally on the fetishizing of our indigenous bodies for corporate colonial sports, a.k.a. the Super Bowl.
We know that the war on our bodies as black, brown, indigenous, and poor people across these occupied streets continues, from the polarized terror to the developers and the evictors and the scam lords. And of course, it's just getting worse. But we also know that these corporations, as I call it, continue to fetishize and use and exploit the bodies and the icons and the ancestors and the culturas and the elders of our first peoples for profit. We are blessed to have a warrior in all of these struggles, a comrade on the street and in his heart and spirit. Clee Benally, welcome back to Poor People's Radio.
It's great to hear your voice, and I admire and I'm constantly inspired by your fierce, diligent work.
Thank you, bruh. You've been waging a beautiful campaign of truth against this stupid bowl. I mean, the fetish bowl. I mean, the Super Bowl. It just happened. Tell listeners a little background on that if they don't know, because we have a lot of listeners and viewers who aren't really always about knowing the background of the fetishizing of these icons. Who might think, oh, what's wrong with...
There's a long-term intergenerational struggle that has been going on for decades to confront racist imagery, cultural appropriation, and particularly with mascots in sports. And so this has been a problem with the racist Sambo's images that have been confronted and removed, but today indigenous mascots remain. And so it's an ongoing battle. As I mentioned, it's intergenerational. One of my relatives from Black Mesa, Amanda Blackhorse, was the lead plaintiff in the case against the Washington NFL team. That was a huge, decades-long battle that was uphill to address the degradation, the dehumanization that came with the offensive name. And that name was steeped in colonial violence that every time it was displayed just perpetuated that psychic and material trauma that we continue to suffer under colonial occupation. But ultimately, interestingly enough, because of the pressure from the uprisings of the George Floyd rebellion, all the pressure on corporations to take a position to denounce racism forced the Washington NFL team to change their name. So we can thank, as an act of solidarity, that powerful upswelling movement. But advocates around these issues have long recognized that many people will say it's just a symbol, it's just a mascot. There are Native people who feel empowered by the visibility and representation, but they're largely ignoring the dehumanization and commodification that comes along with that. And there are studies out there that have linked indigenous suicide rates and the dehumanization through depictions of racist symbology, not just with the sports industry, but beyond, to these horrible self-inflicted violences that we face that are really socially induced, yeah, that are part of the intergenerational trauma we suffer under capitalism and colonialism and white supremacy. And so it's been a struggle. I think one of the issues is that it's hard for people to see how the systemic issues are linked always. So they feel like it's just a name, it's just a mascot, it's just an image, or this industry is just horrible to begin with, so why not just ignore it and it'll go away? But there are profound impacts that reinforce the underlying narratives, which are a form of power. Symbology has power. Otherwise, KKK wouldn't be burning crosses. Otherwise, Nazi imagery wouldn't be so contentious. You know, symbols have power. And there's a spiritual component to the ongoing conflicts that we face. And so those conflicts came to the surface again during this Super Bowl, which, you know, I have to state, first off, the NFL is an industry wrought with horrible practices. It's misogynistic. It's nationalistic. You know, it harbors rapists. The industry as a whole, it's a multi-million dollar industry. I think, like, there are estimates that the Super Bowl, when it goes to a host town, it contributes $300 to $500 million. I mean, it's a capitalist industry. Like, the sports team players get paid an estimate $3 million each. Like, all those resources, I mean, should they be going to entertainment, or should they be going to deal with the social ills that we are facing today? And that's another, you know, dynamic that comes along with this. But as I was saying, these issues came to a head over the weekend. Sunday, the Kansas City Chiefs played against the Eagles, and for decades, again, this is not a new battle. The Kansas City team has been challenged and confronted by local organizers to change their mascot and their cultural appropriation. In the past, have had what they call, and they still continue to this day, the tomahawk chop, where they start with a very stereotypical song, the whole crowd gets into chanting it, and they do a hand gesture motion that they call the tomahawk chop. And they have a big drum that they bring in that looks like a giant powwow drum that they pound at the beginning, even though the team recently banned headdresses and racist slogans at their games. Even this Sunday, people were wearing fake headdresses, costume representational headdresses of Chiefs that are sacred. And this is the issue of cultural appropriation here. It's not appreciation. It's the ongoing degradation and dehumanization of indigenous people for profit and entertainment. And that's a perpetuation of colonial violence, and induces continual spiritual and material harm against our communities. The demands from the folks in so-called Kansas who have been holding it down against this racist team have been very clear, that they want the name change, that they want to end all forms of cultural appropriation that are included in their performances. I don't think they should stop there. I think restitution is in order. It's hard to just focus on reforms when ultimately that whole industry is problematic. I mean, here in Arizona, while they're celebrating the Super Bowl, we have an estimated 9,000 relatives on the streets just in so-called Maricopa County, where the Super Bowl was being held. We had 5,000 of those relatives estimated don't have access to shelters. So there are 5,000 unsheltered relatives while this huge capitalist spectacle is happening. And so we have to think about what our priorities are. Let's talk about these disparities. Let's talk about capitalism and its violences. Racism is insidious and it's systemic. We can never forget that, and we can never disconnect from that. Otherwise, we dispossess ourselves. It's about, you know, engaging in the struggles where you're at, and unsettling colonialism and embodying anti-capitalism in the ways that, you know, work for you, and providing mutual aid that we all need in these times when this society is going down. It doesn't mind sacrificing those of us who are most vulnerable. So we need to be there to bring each other up. That's how we will make it through. Engage in those struggles right where you're at, right where your feet are planted, whether you're a guest or you're indigenous or you're a settler. Unsettle that consciousness, unsettle that material relationship, confront those power relationships that you have so we can make it through this for the coming generations.
Thank you, Brad, and we'll be talking to you soon.
You are listening to Poor People's Radio. After this short music break, we will hear comrades from the Hood Squad who has been uncovering decades of polarized terror against black and brown bodies in our communities.
You will not be able to stay home, brother. You will not be able to plug in, turn on, and cop out. You will not be able to lose yourself on Skag and skip out for beer during commercials because the revolution will not be televised.
So we are blessed to have comrades from the Hood Squad. What's up? What's up? We are so blessed because you are warriors alongside and all of us walking to uncover these ongoing harassment and right straight up war on our backs. So first of all, tell listeners and viewers a little bit about what y'all do as the Hood Squad, badass street warriors, and then what's going on. What kind of terror are y'all uncovering?
Blessed to be here. Thank you for having us on and making sure that our voices are boosted and our voices are heard, because, you know, it's always a cover-up when it comes to these pigs out here in the streets and the system. We're an art collective. We do community outreach, and we have a public health and safety patrol out in the streets all up and down the Bay Area and beyond. What we do during our police accountability, public health and safety patrol, is we go out, we feed people, we care for the community, we clothe the community, we pass out donations that people give us directly for folks in the streets. And also we go through all the traps, places where underground economies occur, because, you know, in this capitalist system, we're not getting no piece of the pie. We're not being looked out for by the governments. We're not kept safe, and we're kept broke and at the bottom of an economical pyramid so we could be people's slaves. So what we do is we go through those traps and we make sure that people are safe. We're not there to enforce laws. We don't care about any laws that are being broken or not being broken. We just want to make sure that people in the streets are safe and making sure that people make it home to their families every night. So that's one thing that we do. We also do a lot of advocacy work for folks in the streets that need, in the community, that need our help. So people reach out to us. On the peninsula, what's happening? We're actually based out of East Palo Alto, although we're in Oakland a lot, and we started off doing a lot of outreach in Oakland. We're actually based in East Palo Alto, so we do a lot in San Mateo County, not just Alameda County, but also in San Mateo County and Santa Clara County. We have been dealing with, for what I'm aware of, for decades, police corruption in our area, and dangerous corruption. We've had police gangs, one called the Wolf Pack. It was a police gang in East Palo Alto that was going around terrorizing people. A lot of that gang got exposed. And so a couple, meaning like two cops, got indicted and pulled up on charges. And the rest of the crooked got away and escaped to other departments. One department that they escaped to was Menlo Park. And Menlo Park is next door, literally our next door neighbor in East Palo Alto. It's also where Facebook is located, Facebook headquarters. So you literally have Facebook headquarters that damn near moved into the hood. And it expedited up gentrification and want the gentrification to occur. When they first came to our neighborhood, they had an incentive for their employees to move $10,000 to $15,000 per person, per household that moved within 2 square miles of headquarters, which of course is the black and brown neighborhood. So shortly after that, and we protested all of that, we got them to pause that program. We couldn't get them to delete it entirely, but we did get them to pause it. They haven't resumed. But they then gave millions, when I say millions, I mean $11.2 million to the Menlo Park Police Department directly to start a substation and pay the salaries of the police to our neighborhood. So literally there's now a substation in Menlo Park that was funded by Facebook, and we raised all kinds of hell the past few years. But if you're not aware of the history of the Menlo Park police, they're extremely racist. They do a whole lot of damage to our community by creating false reports, planting evidence on people, beating people, all the above. So giving them that kind of money and incentive to, like, basically start a whole new gentrification campaign that was heavily funded. And so we fought that for years. And they just recently, last year, because of the pressure that we put on them, we gave the money to a community organization. And I'll say we tried to get them to put the funds into our public health and safety program so that we could do police accountability here to offset what they had done. And they tried to demonize us for that in the papers and whatnot. Make a long story short, we finally caught one of the crooked cops on camera. They basically will pull people over, give them a fake reason for pulling them over, like you were speeding, you didn't stop at a stop sign. In Menlo Park, their traffic cameras are initiated after the stop. So it never catches the reason why the person is pulled over. That's never caught on camera. That's never caught on camera. What's caught on camera is everything after that. So they're able to lie and come up with reasons why they're caught on camera. The next thing that they do is they come up with reasons to search your car that is subjective, that can't be proven. Like, I smell marijuana. Your car smells like you've been smoking marijuana in here, and the person doesn't even smoke. I smell alcohol, that type of thing, so they can run through your car and stuff like that. But what has really brought us to where we're at right now in this stage in the campaign is a brother named Trinidad Brown and a brother named Brownie. Brownie is actually one of our members. Back in September, he was going home to his house. I should also say that Brownie is paralyzed and in a wheelchair. Brownie was driving back to his house, and he saw, we call them the bailout boys, but it's the corrupt cops in the neighborhood, looked like they were harassing one of his neighbors, which they were, running through their house with no warrant, apparently, is what we researched after the fact and came up with. But Brownie's asking him, slows down, didn't even stop, slows down. And they told him to stop when he slowed down. And he's like, yeah, I'm trying to figure out, you know, what's going on. And to make a long story short with Brownie, they yanked him out of his car. And if you're paralyzed, imagine the trauma that that's creating. Trinidad, they literally lied on him and said that he was speeding. He was actually going 25. Unbeknownst to them, his home security camera catches the whole block. So it caught the whole thing. Wow. So it caught him doing 25 when they said he was doing 40. It caught what is never actually caught, which is the original reason for the stop. If they stop you illegally, everything after that doesn't even matter. You already stopped him illegally. And then on top of that, they beat him down and broke his tooth. These are not isolated incidents. There's so many people in our neighborhood that this has been happening to for decades, for decades. And people are terrified. Nobody wants to talk about it. Folks just want to be left out of it because they're in fear.
For all listeners and viewers of Poor Magazine, please follow the Hood Squad. Please follow their work. It's badass. Shout out to y'all. You really powerful. We love you. Please see this as a spot for us to come back and check in and where are people at. All power to the people, family. So much love.
Finally, we have one more performance of the powerful play Crushing Wheelchairs, created by all of us houseless and formerly houseless culture workers, lifting up our relatives at Wood Street. To get tickets, go to poormagazine.org.
It's funny how money changes situation. Miscommunication leads to complication.
So that's all for this segment of Poor News Network. If you want to hear any of our Poor People's Revolutionary Radio, you can subscribe to Poor Magazine SoundCloud channel or find and subscribe to Poor News Network on YouTube. Thanks to Anita Johnson, David D, and Anthony Fest for the media access, and all of you for listening. All power to the people.
Now, how come your talk turned cold? Gain the whole world for the price of your soul. Trying to grab hold of what you can't control. Now you all lost with a sight to behold. Wisdom is better than silver and gold. I was hopeless, now I'm on hope roll. Every man want to act like he's exempt. Need to get down on his knees and repent. Can't slick talk on the day of judgment.
Women of the party, today, after over a half century, we can speak out in open praise of female members of the Black Panther Party, members who served with heart, honor, and distinction. Whom did they serve? They served the party, obviously, but more importantly, they served their people, working through a slew of community programs. They work daily to ease human suffering. one sister, Naima Major, had just graduated high school when she ditched college to join the Black Panthers of San Francisco. Major's experiences ran true for thousands of young brothers and sisters who were hungry for being a part of a revolutionary movement. Majors wrote the following: devoted to the Black Revolution and the 10-point program, I commenced with Baby in Sling to doing the hard community work required of all Panthers, organizing poor women like myself, planning and supporting free schools, writing letters for people who couldn't write, demanding decent housing for people who are afraid of the landlord, helping get the paper out. That's the newspaper, the Black Panther she's speaking of. Health cadres, food cadres, you name it. Did some dangerous work too, and studied Hegel, Marx, Lenin, Fanon, Mao, like a religious zealot. Mostly with the brothers, fought with them over Bakunin and Stalin. Just because I was the only woman in my group, husband gone, baby at the breast, nobody cut me any slack, but nobody molested me either. I had to learn what the brothers learned. That's from my book, We Want Freedom, page 181. Comrade Sister Naima Major, San Francisco Branch, Northern California, Black Panther Party. Recently, as years pass, scholars feel it safe to now write about one of the most radical groups of the 20th century, the Black Panther Party. What role did women play? They played a pivotal role. Indeed, women were the majority of members of the party. In the newly published book, Comrade Sisters, Women of the Black Panther Party, by Stephen Shaines and Erica Huggins, Angela Davis, who worked with the party in LA, writes that 66% of the party members were women. Imagine that, 66%. No movie has dared come close to that reality, right? And when you come down to it, who do you think ran most of the community programs serving the community? Women did it. They made it happen. And they make it happen today. Breathing life into families, healing, helping, loving, struggling, still. They enrich our todays as they enriched our yesterdays. With love, not fear. This is Mumia Abu-Jamal.
These commentaries are recorded by Prison Radio.
All's my life I has to fight. All's my life I. Hard times like, yeah. Bad trips like, yeah. Nazareth, I'm f***ed up, homie, you f***ed up. But if God got us, then we gon' be alright. And when I wake up, I recognize you looking at me for the pay cut. Bahamas, I be looking at you from the face down. One Mac 11, even boom with the bass down. Skimming, and let me tell you about my life. Painkillers only put me in a twilight. We're pretty Benjamin is the highlight. I tell my mama I love her, but this what I like. Lord knows, 20 of them in my Chevy. Tell them all to come and get me, reaping everything I sow. So my karma come in heaven, no preliminary hearings on my record. I'm a f***ing gangster in silence for the record. Tell the world I know it's too late. Boys and girls, I think I've gone crazy. Trying to side my face, it's all day. Won't you please believe when I say, when you know, we've been hurt, been down before. When our pride was low, looking at the world like, where do we go? And we hate po-po, wanna kill us dead in the street for sure. I'm at the preacher's door. My knees getting weak and my gun might blow, but we gon' be alright. A car, 40 acres and a mule, a piano, a guitar, anything. See, my name is Lucy, I'm your dog. Motherfucker, you can live at the mall. I can see the evil, I can tell it, I know it's illegal. I don't think about it, I deposit every other zero. Thinking of my partner, put the candy, painting on a Rico. Digging in my pocket, and a profit big enough to feed you. Every day my logic, get another dollar just to keep you in the presence of your chico. Ah! I don't talk about it, be about it, every day I sequel. If I got it, then you know you got it, heaven I can reach you. Pet dog, pet dog, pet dog, my dog, that's all. Pick back and chat, I trap the back for y'all. I rap, I black on tracks, so rest assured. My rights, my wrongs, I write till I'm right with God. When you know, we've been hurt, been down before. When our pride was low, looking at the world like, where do we go? And we hate po-po, wanna kill us dead in the street for sure. I'm at the preacher's door, my knees getting weak and my gun might blow. But we gon' be alright.
In my prayers.
Hard Knock, turn the speakers in your car up. Quality program, turn in for the real talk. Don't stop, EMN, at it again. Sandman, Daddy Man, Chris Juwan Kim, yeah. Innovation, stimulating ill conversation. Anything else, just imitation. Simulation, step into the zone. The Bay Area zone, Hard Knock Radio, let's go. Big shout out to Needin' Davey D.
Yeah, right, feel me, yeah.
Honing down at Hard Knock Radio.
Hard Knock Radio.
Kinda crazy though. Oakland, stand up.
Yeah. Stand up.
Ensemble, Big Night Wolves.
Yeah. Kansas City.
Yeah.
Bellevue. Come on, check out.
Why every novice think they hard knock when they ain't going all in and ain't paid the cost of the fee? Hating that they made they beats, trying to eat till they're ready from the steel gray beats. They bleed. Maybe they'll save you a seat at the table with a great bread making a speech. Say some peace to their lovers, I name with a please. Hey, there's some shade on.
Real Talk Radio.
You are now rocking with the best in the West.
Yes, Coast. Monday through Friday.
Sing it, Chris.
Let's go.
Picasso,
what?
And Maya.
Who?
And my last name is Susana. Yeah,
KABU Community Radio holds open meetings concerning the operations and programming of KABU in accordance with the requirements of the Communications Act of 1934 and certification requirements of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Information about KABU Community Radio's open meeting policy is available at our website at kabu.fm. Due to the temporary closure of in-station activity at KABU, meetings will be conducted online via public video conferencing unless otherwise noted. A public link and phone number to attend the meetings are available on our website. The Engineering Committee meets on the first Thursday of the month at 7 p.m. Please visit our website at kabu.fm to verify if a meeting is being held.
Thank you for tuning in to KABU Community Radio during this special programming campaign. All Thrills, No Frills, Volume 2. This February and March, you will hear different marathons and series, all brought to you by our talented programmers, including specials like Black History and Future Series. If you'd like to help KBOO reach our $17,000 goal by March 25th, go to kboo.fm/give or text KBOO to the number 44321 right now. We thank you, and you're welcome.
Connect with your favorite community radio station on social media.
Our Facebook page is facebook.com/kboomradio.
And follow us on Twitter at twitter.com/kboo.
We also have a YouTube channel at youtube.com/kboo radio.
We also provide content to the free music archive.
An interactive library of high-quality legal audio downloads.
That's at freemusicarchive.org/curator/kboo.
You can find all this and more on the KBOO website, kboo.fm.
Thanks for listening.
Thanks for listening to KBOO Portland, 90.7 FM in the Portland metro area and all over the world at kboo.fm.
KBOO Community Radio holds open meetings concerning the operations and programming of KBOO in accordance with requirements of the Communications Act.